This Do Lectures episode features founder of breast cancer awareness charity Copperfield, Chris Halenga, recorded live at the global event in Cardigan, West Wales in 2018.
Hi, I'm so excited to be here. You have no idea. It's a real honour, and I actually peed myself when I got the email inviting me to come. It's been a dream, so dreams come true, guys. It's me. I'm going to talk about how to glitter a turd. But first, baby picture, because everybody loves a baby picture. And okay, so now I've actually forgotten which one's me, which is really good. But I have an identical twin sister called Marin, and this is me and her. We still have massive cheeks. And we were born and grew up in Germany and wore really cool 80s clothes. Fast forward to 22-year-old Chris. Some stats about her. She was not very confident. She kind of like hung around in the background. No real plans in life. Didn't really think about the future too much. No purpose, really. Only just to get up and live. And was with a horrible boy. Like, seriously horrible, who made me think that I needed another human being in my life to be happy. So I was constantly chasing for him to like me. Didn't. And I had a lumpy boob. And here's a question for you all. What were you doing exactly 10 years ago today? It's quite hard to think about, isn't it? But for me, it's quite poignant that I'm doing this talk today. It's very serendipitous. I don't know how these things happen, but they somehow have. And actually, it was exactly 10 years ago today that I went to my GP with a lumpy boob. And she told me it was nothing to worry about and it was absolutely fine. And that I was a young woman and it wouldn't be anything serious and not to worry about it. And it was probably something to do with the hormones the pill that I was taking at the time. And this, guys, is the exact message that I sent my then not very nice boyfriend who was living in China. It's so cringe, but I'm going to share it with you anyway. So my lumpy boob is A-okay. She thinks it's to do with my hormones and the pill I'm on because it stopped my period for such a long time. I'm way too young to have any serious issues, smiley face. She suggests evening primrose oil to help with the tenderness. Lol. I mean, funny. That was my humor at 22. And anyway, that's that. There was more to that message, but you do not want to know what I said. This is the important bit. Finding this on my Facebook messages it gave me goosebumps a couple of months ago when I found out and realized it was the 30th of June and it was coming up to this day. And I actually put this image on my Instagram feed today, and oh my God, the comments that I've had from other people with similar stories is insane. So if you want to go check that out later, then please do. But that is exactly what I wanted to hear. I wanted to hear that I was fine. I was a young woman. I had plans. I had travel plans. And here I am in China, living those travel plans. I planned to, I wasn't entirely sure what I was going to do, but my plan was to travel and earn money doing it. I wasn't entirely sure how I was going to do that, but I set off to China, and I was working for a French-Chinese travel company, which is a very odd combination. I sacked it off very quickly. And I taught English, even though I had zero qualifications. And at Christmas time, I came home, and I had a check-in with the GP because the lump was still growing. I was still having pain there. The tenderness was still there. I was still downing the evening primrose oil. Once again, they said it was absolutely fine. I saw a different GP this time. That was cool. I didn't really think much of it, but my mum did, and she was not so impressed. She is a pessimist anyway, which kind of is good in my favor. She's going to watch this, which is not great. But she But I'm so glad that she pushed me to go back. She pushed me to go back to the GP and ask for a referral. And I wouldn't have done that without her. But by this point, I mean, the symptoms were getting worse, and I was, you know, things had, they had to be investigated. I mean, you can all guess where we're heading with this. After this, it wasn't such good news anymore. So I had to push for this referral. I got to the breast clinic, and they once again wanted to wait for about 3 weeks to see if coming off the pill would help with the hormones. And by this point, I was waking up with a bloodstained T-shirt. So I had nipple discharge coming out of my left breast, and it was very painful. But they still didn't take it very seriously. But eventually, they did a mammogram, they did a biopsy, and hey presto, you have breast cancer. I mean, it came as such a shock, and that's because their attitude all the way along. So from it was 8 months from the first time I went to the GP to actually being told I had breast cancer. All the way along, the attitude was, it's nothing, you're too young, you're 22, it's not going to be bad. And that's exactly what I believed, and I gobbled all that up. And this was my initial thought, breast cancer equals death, because I knew nothing about it. I was 22, why would I know much about it? And that unfortunately led to a very late diagnosis. So in those 8 months, we can't know for sure, but it's very likely that it had spread. So when I got my initial diagnosis, they did further tests and they found that the cancer had spread to my spine. So it was already in my bones, deeming it incurable, advanced, stage 4, secondary, metastatic. You've probably heard all those terms. They all mean the same thing. They all mean you're fucked. And that I didn't really know what to do with that information, but I just knew that I had to get better somehow. But obviously, I mean, what do you do at this point? Well, I made a scarf. So this is it. I wasn't a knitter, but I thought I needed some kind of a creative outlet, and this was it. And my friends and family were really happy about it because they started buying me wool and how to knit books, and they're like, we're helping her, we're getting you through this. And then I made that and I got bored. I was like, well, that's that done. And then, of course, I mean, classic picture of me with the hair. I needed treatment. At first, I needed to get this spine, this tumor on my spine seen to because it was very painful. I could hardly bend down. So they fried that, and then I had 5 months of chemotherapy to shrink the tumor, which by this point was the size of an avocado, and it needed to be shrunk to a plum size for it to be removed. So I had chemotherapy, which did that trick. And in that time, I was living at home, I was not doing much else, and made one scarf, and got slightly frustrated and a little bit confused about what had just happened. So I did the classic Gen Y thing and Googled breast cancer awareness in young women, because I wanted to try and figure out why I didn't know I could get breast cancer at 22 or 23 by this point. And I didn't know, and I wanted to understand why I hadn't been checking my boobs and how I'd left it so late. And obviously nothing came up. I mean, for the sake of this, nothing came up. Just go with it. This is just a graphic. Obviously something came up, but it was all shit. My sister's really good at Photoshop. So nothing of use came up. Nothing there. I thought, well, hang on. This organisation could have told me to check my boobs, or you know, maybe if I was at school, could I have got that lesson then? So I got all these ideas were flying in my head, and then ultimately, all this research I was doing led me to the thought of this sort of sliding door situation. I missed that train. I missed the opportunity to get on that train and learn about my boobs and have the confidence to go to the GP and say, this lump isn't right for me and you need to refer me right now. I put all my faith in that GP, and I can be pretty certain it led to a very late diagnosis. So, I had an idea. much like this chap. And I knew that something had to change. And I thought, well, I've got lots of time. I'm living at home with my mum. I've got, like, no strings. So no kids, no boyfriend, no nothing really, no job. And I have time, apart from obviously trying to deal with the cancer thing. But that was, like, you know, on the side. So I got some friends and family around a table at my mum's place. And we, ladies and gentlemen, came up with this piece of paper. Which, I mean, this is not my handwriting. It's one of my friends Jamie's handwriting. It's really bad. But we can make out the boobs at the top. So we got really far at that meeting. There was, I mean, boys in this, so that obviously they were going to doodle some boobs. And we came up with a name, Copperfield, which was then spelt with a K. And there's other stuff on here that we have since made happen, which is very exciting to see. And we still have this hanging up in our office in London, just to remind us of, like, well, how shoddy that first meeting was, but how great it also was. And it led to us setting up an organisation. And at that point, we felt it was more of a campaign called Copperfield. And ultimately, it was to save lives. We wanted to ensure that everything that happened to me was not going to happen to anyone else. I mean, you've probably all heard this really famous saying, all good life-changing campaigns start with no money and some stickers. Well, that is exactly what we did. So my friends and I were going to a festival anyway, and we were going to this really great festival called Beach Break Live. I don't know if you've heard of it. I mean, if you have heard of it, you know why I'm smiling. But it was a student-only festival, and so we were surrounded by our target audience, and we were going anyway, so I just emailed the organisers, and I said, so I've got this idea, it's not even a charity yet, but I really want to talk about boobs with all your people at the festival. And I've got breast cancer, so you can't really say no. And please let me come. And they said yes. And I mean, I was floored that they said yes. So in a very short space of time, we came up with, my ballsy friend Jamie, this guy here, walked into Homebase and said, can I have a gazebo for free? No, but he just thought he'd give it a try. We weren't a charity at this point, and there was no reason why they would give us a gazebo. So we actually paid for a gazebo and got it printed up with a logo on, which my sister had designed with our friend Hugo. And we got some stickers made and some T-shirts and men, lots of boys, because we thought, well, that'll bring the girls over to the tent. And whilst we were there, we learnt so much at this. We didn't know if this idea was going to stick. We weren't sure if people would be accepting of this message at a festival, where they're there to have nothing but fun. But what we found is that people were quite receptive. I don't know if it's because they saw someone with no hair, clearly had cancer, having a good time, and they thought, oh, you know, it's not, I mean, it's a message, but, you know, it's shit, but it's not that shit. I mean, she's still having fun. Let's listen to what she has to say. And Myron and I, my sister and I, were face painting each other one day because we love to face paint. And this was before glitter, everyone. This was like just, we liked face paints. And we were face painting each other, and this person came up to us and said, oh, how much is it for face paints? And we thought, a donation? And we got someone to bring some buckets, and that's where our fundraising started. Because, I mean, before you start a charity, you have to raise £5,000, and there was no other way of us doing that other than, like, trying to get money out of some people. So that happened, and, I mean, the face painting was so bad. But somehow, you have a captive audience. They're sat in front of you, and you can start a conversation about boobs because they don't want their face to not or to be semi-painted, or to leave the tent with some kind of weird thing on their face. So we had a captive audience. They couldn't really escape. So we thought, that was a success. Let's go to more festivals. And then by the end of summer 2009, I won this thing called the Pride of Britain Award, which was very bizarre to me. I mean, it was amazing. And I mean, by this point, I was feeling very poorly. It was the chemotherapy had a very cumulative effect on me, so I felt like I'd hit a brick wall towards the end. And then I was somehow lifted when I was told I'd won this award. But, I mean, I was a little bit confused because at this point I hadn't really achieved anything yet. We weren't even a charity at this point. I'd written a blog. I mean, I had breast cancer. I'd written a blog and I went to a few festivals. And I know this might come as a surprise to some of you, but having breast cancer does not make you an amazing person. I mean, there's a fact that you should all know that if someone's a knob before cancer, it's very likely they're still a knob with cancer and sometimes after. So, I mean, I'm not saying I'm a knob, but I'm saying that I was grateful. Thank you, Pride of Britain Awards. And for the charity, I mean, it was monumental. It was a moment where the charity and its branding and the website was televised to 6 million people in one night, and that's obviously advertising you cannot pay for. And it was a catalyst, and it was an amazing stepping stone for the organisation. And then a month later, or actually, no, sorry, I skipped a bit. When you get Pride of Britain Award, you get invited to number 10 Downing Street, and this was Gordon Brown days, and I spoke to Samantha Brown. She was so keen to help us, and she said, is there anything I can do for you? And I said, well, we've applied to be a charity, but we've not heard anything yet. And then I got a call from number 10 Downing Street the next day saying, I'm just chasing up your charity application. It should be all sorted soon. I mean, yeah. So, and a month later, on the 28th of October 2009, the day I had my left breast removed, when it finally shrunk to a size where it could be removed, we also got charity status, and my sister visited me in hospital when I was coming around from the operation, and she said, 1132366, and that is our charity number. So obviously something had ended that day. I'd finally got the cancer out of my body, well, most of it, and then something very amazing began. And, I mean, it's continued as a bit of a whirlwind since then. We do a lot of things, and hopefully you have heard of us already. But, I mean, if you're over the age of 35, you probably haven't. no offence. so we do things... I mean, we tried to get in there where the young people are. And we still go to festivals. We have the sexy Belinda the Boobmobile here. We have to be quite clever with our targeting, so we straight away got students involved, and we have the university boob teams across, I think it's about 65 universities now, and they infiltrate their campuses and spread the message on campus, so it's like peer-to-peer marketing. We have lovely tattoos. At festivals, we use celebrity endorsement. Fern is amazing. We have quite a lot of celebrity ambassadors now. We run half marathons and stuff in giant boobs. We have something called the Boobettes, which is an amazing thing. These women... So, obviously, I have a story, and it's very strong, but I soon realised that I can't go to every school, I can't go to every workplace and tell them my story, so... Do you know what? There's lots of me out there. And we started recruiting for all these women, and we've called them the Boobettes. And they go into schools and workplaces, and they tell their story, and it's very positive. And they leave organisations, young mum groups, young offenders groups, like anyone really, with a very positive message to check their boobs. And then we do, I find very clever things like get our little logo and a reminder to check your boobs in bras. So we're in Next bras, we're in Tesco bras, and I mean, ultimately we should be in every single bra, it should just be a standard thing. And we have our text reminder service, which you should all sign up to, which is a free service. We text you every month to remind you to check your boobs, and the message is always quite amusing. So it's worth it, and it's a good little prompt. Some of the things that I'm really proud of, okay, so, I mean, it wasn't really intentional to have Susan Boyle twice in this presentation, but she is. And I just wish she knew that. So we did a campaign with The Sun, with Page 3, where we took over Page 3 for 8 months and reminded people to check their boobs. And apparently, well, this must have been Susan's people that tweeted this, but Susan was checking her boobs. We just have this amazing Copperfield family, and they do things like running boob costumes for us, and it's amazing. These events are amazing, and people come over to us and say, how can I be part of that? That looks so much fun. And that's what it should be about. It should be about fun. A couple of years ago, I was given an honorary doctorate by the University of Nottingham, Trent University, and I'm a doctor of public administration. And I don't have a degree, so to get that was that I skipped a few bits ahead, and I actually got a doctorate. So I mean, I'm pretty proud of that, and I'm I'm proud of that because it recognized the work that I'd done with Copperfield. It wasn't necessarily, you've got breast cancer, you deserve this. It was, you've got breast cancer, but you've created an organization and it's actually really helped people, and it's quite an amazing model what you've done. And that for me was, I mean, a very special moment. And I got to wear such a colorful outfit. And I mean, what it's all about, ultimately, is saving lives and ensuring that other people don't sit in the same boat as me. And this was our first sort of success story, our bittersweet moment, when a girl called Jenny got in touch and said, I went to the GP, but she told me it was nothing. But I went back because of you, and I took the magazine article that I was in to the GP, and she said, I told the GP that it can happen to young people. And she was 26 at the time, and she was diagnosed within a week. And she's now absolutely fine. She's past the 5-year all clear stage, and she's living a lovely, wonderful, vibrant life. And I mean, there's been so many Jennies since then, but Jenny's story really sticks out because it was like maybe, I guess, our first. And it was an amazing moment where all makes sense and all the hard work pays off, and it makes you go, shit, we have to keep doing it. So we do, and I'll come to that in a minute. Ultimately, we want everyone to stand the best possible chance of surviving. No breast cancer should be diagnosed late. There's just no need for it to be diagnosed late. And as Stefan here was wondering, amazed how long she's been going for. I mean, me and you both, Stefan. it has been almost 10 years. And with a stage 4 diagnosis, I Googled it one night. And they say about 2.5 years is the average survival at that stage. And it has spread to other parts of my body over the years. It's gone to my liver, other parts of my bones, and also my brain. I'm still here. So I don't know what I'm doing, but I know that what my purpose became with Copperfield has certainly helped me continue to live a life that I love, and that makes a massive difference within every cell of my body. And then some of the other bits, I should say now that I've actually stepped down as the CEO of Copperfield a couple of years ago, because I got to the point where I said, never is cancer going to dictate what I do with Copperfield. It has to be me who takes control of that. So before shit hits the fan anymore, I'm going to step down. And also, I just think organizations shouldn't always be run by the founders. For a very long time, and it needed a new CEO and a new driver. So now we have a wonderful new CEO who runs it in London, and these wonderful all women here who run the charity full time. Not intentional that they're all women, but it's kind of great. And I still get to organise our annual music festival called Festafeel with Fern. We organise that together. This little being here certainly keeps me going. She's my flatmate and a ledge. I do yoga. I do that, and I spent some time in Sri Lanka at the end of last year, and it was wonderful. I jump into lakes topless. That keeps me alive. And then treatments, obviously. I mean, it's because I'm overrunning. So. I can't say for sure what it is exactly that's helping me, but it's a combination of everything. And obviously treatment and amazing new treatments are helping me stay here. And there was a drug that I was on last year that was barely in the test tube when I was first diagnosed. So it is amazing how far we come very quickly. But it's a combination of things. I do lots of integrative treatments too. And this was me actually in February getting 15 brain tumours zapped. Which was a horrible time, but I remind myself of the last horrible time, and I think I got through that, and then you kind of somehow in beautiful Pembrokeshire, and you're stood in front of lots of lovely people telling your story and feeling great. So I don't know, it's just been that for 10 years, and I can hopefully can continue to do that for as long as possible. And then, I mean, work-wise, there, because I went part-time with the charity, my twin and I decided we had to think about what we really loved, go back to what we really loved.
And it's certainly not managing people and the stresses of a business and sacking people and doing all that absolute shit. So we thought, let someone else do it. I moved to Cornwall and we can run a cake and coffee truck by the beach. So that's what we do now. And it's wonderful. And we've gone back to our sort of German heritage where we make German style cakes and surprise every German tourist that comes to our van. By speaking German to them, and it's great, and it's going back to a very simple life, and I guess my message is to you, maybe if you've seen talks and you've gone, oh, I need to achieve so much, I need to do so much, and actually taking it from someone who has done a lot and has stressed herself out beyond belief and has had some really tough times, sometimes the beauty and the fun is actually in the more simple things, and it's okay to do not everything, and do everything, and see everything, and be everything. It's the little things that count. So I'm going to leave you with a message that you should, and you should do check your boobs. Maybe there should be a book, David. I don't know. Thank you very much.
Do Lectures is here to share stories of remarkable people in the hope they will inspire you to go and do amazing things too. There are over 300 talks to listen to, or if you prefer, watch on our website, thedolectures.com. Hit the subscribe button on your favourite podcast platform to get the latest episodes when they come out.